Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, friends. I am Deb Karen, your host of Culture Crush RX, brought to you by Anahata Marketing. In this show, we explore what makes great company culture and chat with local business leaders about how we can maximize our business success by fostering happy, healthy, peak-performing teams and ensuring that everybody is aligned with the company mission. Today, I have in studio with me Sheila Keitel and Deanne Palin of On Point Business Solutions. These ladies and their team help businesses grow and transform by providing consulting services and tools, including executive coaching, process improvement, learning and training, but at the core of all this work is their belief that alignment and culture is critical to a business's success. I happen to agree with you there. Mm-hmm. Sheila and Deanne are also joined by Matt Altman, the co-founder and CEO of Sportique Apparel Company. He is a user of their services. I formerly had Matt on this show with me, I think back in October. It was a fabulous conversation, so I'm really excited to kind of dive into how you ladies have helped Matt create his company culture and maintain it with his new hires. I would love each of you to introduce yourselves, and I can't remember what your answer was, Matt, to this question, so you probably already have it prepared, but we're going to make the gal start first. I like you to always tell me, what was your very first job? What was the first thing you did that earned you money?
Oh, my goodness.
You can rock, paper, scissors for who's going to go first.
Does babysitting at 11 years old count?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. 11 years old?
11 years old.
I have one more year and my daughter can start making money?
It was my freedom.
Yeah.
There was nothing better than being initiated into my life of independence by making my own 50 cents an hour. So your daughter's going to cost you a lot more.
I know. Yeah, I know. I think now most of my friends pay like $10 an hour mm-hmm. for babysitters. It's a lot.
Actually, crazy enough, that was my first job as well. And I remember I was dumped into a family with four kids. I was 12, so I was you're a little more advanced and proactive than me, but 12 years old, four kids between 5 and 1.
Wow.
And they were Tasmanian devils. So
that's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, I should have had hazard pay, but my pay was probably about 50 cents as well.
That's great. And now, just so our listeners know each of your voices, I didn't make you guys say your names. So it was Sheila that spoke first.
Yes.
Started babysitting at 11. And what is your role? Your company is On Point Business Solutions. What is your role with the company?
My strength, and actually Deanne and I have had a long time partnership.
Yeah.
My strength is about creating, leading, and carrying out solutions for growth. But I do that through learning and development. And it's really a strong focus on engaging employees so they become major contributors to the business success.
Fabulous. Okay. And Deanne?
I started On Point Business Solutions back in 2014 and quickly learned through the work with helping businesses grow and transform that I needed an awesome partner that could help operationalize that through culture and development. And Sheila has become just a huge asset and partner with me.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And then Matt, let's reintroduce you. What was your very first job? I can't remember what you told me.
So I'll give you my first, and I'm actually going to give you my second. So okay. The first one was a Peter Piper pizza.
Okay.
And the second one was Blockbuster Video. So I'm not actually showing some age there.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't exist anymore. And I can't remember how much I got paid, but I just remember watching a lot of movies. So that was probably the highlight.
Yeah. Mine was a TCBY. I got paid $3.15 an hour. Which is, like, if you think about all the things that you were asked to do over the course of an hour, I would be like, no thanks, you can keep your $3.15.
Well, I think the hardest job I ever had was working at Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah.
It's still to this day.
Right? Mine was working in a grocery store. That was my hardest and least favorite. It was being a cashier at a grocery store. But anyway, that is all to lead us to the concept of company culture. It's something that I'm truly just fascinated by on my own. And I'd kind of love for you ladies to just tell me, what is your definition of company culture? Do you have a way that you would define a positive culture, I guess? I mean, culture's there, and no matter whether you've created it or not, but what would you say is a positive company culture?
Well, when we talk about culture, we're talking about the norms, the values that drive people's behaviors. Mm-hmm. And those behaviors are really more of a symptom of what the culture is. And I often have asked leaders, do you know what stories are being told about you?
Right.
Because the stories that are talked about are the ones that carry this huge legacy and shape and mold everybody. Where this started for me was in Motorola. And I was listening to the conversation where the Galvin that started Motorola, people said, you know, I was walking 7 flights of stairs to get to my office, and here's this guy just hustling right past me, and he stops and says, good morning, how are you doing? And he would never say, I'm your CEO, but he would ask questions about the company and afterwards, and they would talk about, do you know who I just met? And do you know what he was really like? It was always personable mm-hmm. and always very genuine. His stories carried on long after he passed away.
That's amazing. Do you know what they say about you, Matt? What do your employees say about you?
So it's funny that you asked this, because technically, no. But then we did an exercise. Something really cool happened. We became friends with a gentleman named Cal Fussman, and he's a world-renowned writer, author, and now he does a lot of keynote speaking. Mm-hmm. And he does workshops, and he's really a master storyteller. And he came out and spent some time with our sales team around storytelling. And so we're now at a dinner. We're all gathered around the table, and he's telling stories. And now he kind of flips the script on us, and he has everyone go around the table, and he basically posed the question, why are you here? And really, why are you at Sportique? Mm-hmm. And so if I was to ask that question, I'm not sure what kind of authentic answer I might get, but he asked it. And I got to participate with my why. And then hearing everyone talk, it was just amazing. There was tears, there was laughter, and just the stories now that came out of that was amazing. And so I guess the takeaway for me was there was a lot of validation in decisions that were made years ago around culture, mm-hmm. around the environment, and the place that we wanted to have as a business for people to come in and really be the best version of themselves. Really, I got that kind of validation through those stories.
That definitely feels good.
Yeah.
When you have that. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to kind of dive right into if anybody wanted to go back and listen to the episode, we did talk a lot about what the culture is like at Sportique, which it sounds like it's like you said, a very welcoming place. People are encouraged to grow. People love to be there. It was a conscious decision for how you created it. So Deanne and Sheila, you've worked with Matt on, we talked about Predictive Index and how you went in there and kind of worked with his existing team. Can you touch a little bit on exactly what that process is? Because I was sharing before we got on air, it's actually something I know a lot about a lot of these different processes. This one is not one that I'm entirely familiar with. So I'd love for you to give us a little mini education on what it is and how it's executed.
Sure. Predictive Index is one of the tools that are out there to help. You know, I guess the easiest way to say it is map the DNA of the people in the organization, and tools like that open up wonderful conversations between people. Mm-hmm. It takes some of the personal stuff out of when there's an issue or there's a difference. You know, when you're working with an organization, sales has a different DNA than contract management.
Absolutely.
Or in their case, the graphics team. And sometimes people can get into personality questions, right? And it's really about what's the best way to work together. How do we? Matt's got a huge focus as a CEO, and it's so refreshing. Just this wonderful focus on, I want to leverage the whole person. You mm-hmm. know, I want to create a world here where people feel like they can show up and be genuine and be their whole self, and that we can leverage them in the company. And so Predictive Index in this case was a wonderful tool to open up those conversations and really kind of get at, who are we all? Mm-hmm. How do we work together? How do we leverage our strengths? And then just kind of moving through that in a way that says, we're going to create highways out of dirt paths.
Yeah.
For conversation.
Is it implemented in the same way that a DISC would be? You give people essentially a survey, the self-evaluation, and then you analyze their answers?
Predictive Index adds a really substantial tool, a step in the process.
Okay.
That's all part of the alignment to the job.
Okay.
So when Matt says, I'm looking to fill this position, he selects who he wants to help profile the job. And that predicts a set of behaviors that you really recognize as essential to success. And then Predictive Index, after a series of initial interviews, Predictive Index is the tool that's brought in to say, let's make sure we're seeing this person in the full scope. So it's not a deciding factor. It's a complementary factor.
Okay. Okay.
Because what I love about Matt is he does a really great read on values and people's courage and willingness to take initiative. I think he reads people very well. Mm-hmm. And then PI gets to validate.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. Because you are. You're very involved in the hiring process of your team, which you have the luxury of doing because your team is not huge yet. Right? Do you see that that might change for you? Because you've mentioned that you're using this as you grow. I think the last time you were in here, you're talking about, you know, you'll be growing, obviously. That's the goal for every company, right? So if you get to a certain size, is it going to be difficult for you to continue to be so involved in that process?
Short answer is yes.
Yeah.
We added 9 new people in 2018 and we're slated at at least six in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so as we continue to evolve and grow, it's imperative that we really have a strong foundation around the hiring process. Mm-hmm. And that it's really a team-oriented process as well. That if I'm not involved, that the team they know what to look for to really hire the right person for the role that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Skill set, culture, and the PI is just great because it does. It validates, but it also helps to ask questions that you may not have ever thought of to ask.
Right.
And then, which really opens up a whole nother experience in the interview process to really get to know the person. Because if you really think about it, you don't really have a lot of time to get to know someone. And, you know, everyone's trying to show their best self on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really helps with the process and to really... Because for us, and I say this with all the interviews, it's not one-sided. It's not just about Sportique hiring the best fit for the role. It's also for that person, for it to be a great fit for them as well.
Right.
And that it's a win-win right at the beginning.
Absolutely. I think that's how you ladies would agree, that's how you get the best employees. They have to be happy as well. It goes back to what you were talking about with the alignment in the values.
And the other thing, because we talk about PI relative to the selection and the hiring, but as it relates to the whole life cycle of an employee is so vital. So when we first engaged with Matt around using these tools, it was to help the team build some awareness and communication. And the leadership team, of course, you want to start with the leadership so that you're starting building a common language.
Right.
When you talk about differences and similarities, you begin to realize there are predictable aspects to those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And that can antagonize a team dynamic, or it can really enrich and enhance. So it is a tool for building more respect, communication, and understanding as well. And that's why we say the life cycle, even at times a job changes, but the person doesn't change. Mm. And we find that we're in a job that no longer fits us.
Yeah.
And that's a really challenging conversation.
Right.
But it also is a good reason to talk about how do we leverage your strengths in other ways and help you move to a better fit.
Absolutely.
That's culture.
That is.
And when you think about culture being the way we respect and treat people, because employees will make or break your culture.
Mm-hmm.
And as happy as they are and as well aligned as they are, that's how strong it is. But as soon as there is misalignment and the stories take a different turn, they will kill whatever the mission is, that will not be strong enough to carry the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned you tend to come in a lot of times when companies are at that state, right?
Well, a lot of times, you know, you asked Matt a really good question. I think it's a critical question, is how do you stay on top of that? Or do you think it's going to get unwieldy as you grow? And our work is about helping businesses grow or transform or turn around. And sometimes that involves cleaning up challenges. You know, there's a new CEO with a broken culture, or, you know, challenges with revenue and that sort of thing. The hardest thing to do and the most important is, A, define what that world is you want to live in. And Matt put it that way, and I thought that was wonderful. It's really, what is that place that we want to show up in? You spend so much of your time there.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, a huge chunk of your wake time. You better make sure it's thriving and it's reflective of who you are as a person and your values.
Right.
And so PI helps select a team that aligns with that. And you know, so often companies get stuck on skill sets and measuring for experience. And you can go sideways really quick if you don't have the core values and the alignment around what you're, the world you're trying to live in. Mm-hmm. And then as you grow, the other part of culture work that's so challenging and so critical is making sure that all those people that touch bodies in your organization and have an impact, that they're aligned. And I learned this through working with a Fortune 100 retail company. You know, I had 100 stores across the United States and very, very strong positive culture in the company, but you could feel subcultures in each of those stores.
Of course, yeah.
And so the hard work is, how do you let those leaders be leaders in their own style, in their own fashion, in their own way, but keep your company mm-hmm. culture aligned around what you're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, yeah. Which it's interesting, because when you're talking about the predictive index and people's inherent personalities and how they behave, some of that you can adapt and change. And then so there's kind of a delicate balance there. When you come in, are you identifying, okay, well, we need to maybe let this person go, or can we work with this group of people to change some of their behaviors? Do you have strategies for that? Or
there's probably a really good story to tell, and I'll kick it off and I'm going to turn it over to Sheila, because she had to be in the trenches doing this yeah. work. So she's got, we have a lot of laughs about some of this, and just
is it that maniacal kind of laughter? That-
yeah, it's the, you know, that kind of laughter, but also some sheer joy in the,
yes.
you know, the beginning was exciting. The middle was the maniacal laughter, yeah. and the end was sheer joy and yes. cartwheels, right?
Yes.
So it took us 6 years, but I was talking about the state agency going to private insurance
yeah.
and just to paint a picture for you, you know, you can think about a state agency. Oftentimes, they can't pay rock solid rates. You know, they're having to show up with great benefits, and the hours are, you know, there's just thing gives and takes you have to have for an agency versus a company that has endless revenue and can pour money at best, you know, whatever. And we had to show up and evolve that culture, everything from tearing through the benefits and pay, but probably, you know, the thing that relates most to what you're asking is about the leaders.
Mm-hmm.
There were leaders in that organization who had been there 25, 30 years, who had never interviewed for a job, who started out there, who had no perspective, no external experience, you know, no sense of how they performed. They had never been measured or given feedback. And we had to go through a process of A, restructuring to make sure it was ready to be a company that could measure results and deliver customers outcomes, but we also had to teach those leaders how to believe in themselves, mm-hmm. how to lead other people, how to be measured, how to even show up for an interview and be interviewed to be a leader in those roles. And so, you know, Sheila can give you a little bit more color to that, but that was an amazing process.
Yeah. 6 years is a long time.
Well, that included, there were lots of skills needed for change management, project management, alignment. We made sure the balanced scorecard was in place so people understood how their work contributed to the end result, and therefore accountability mm-hmm. could have a really natural fit if you see the value of your work. And that's when you start stepping up engagement. But there were also people who said, I have no interest in this. I just want to wait till my state retirement kicks in. So at that right. point, we have to say, that's not an option. And
right.
what other conversations do we get to have?
Right.
So
you have to wonder where those people end up finding jobs.
Well,
it's interesting. You know, I got really passionate about culture. I grew up on an Indian reservation
yeah.
in Montana. And you know, I didn't even know that was a culture. It's just all I knew.
Yeah.
And when I was a freshman in high school, my family popped me in a station wagon and we moved to Phoenix or Yuma, Arizona, which was predominantly Hispanic. So all of a sudden saw this contrast in cultures and realized that, you know, one is more matriarchal, one's more relational, one's more, you know, and you
yeah.
just all of a sudden it became so intriguing to me about just how amazing cultures can be different.
Yeah.
And I think about that Indian culture and some of the challenges they had and what we do to overlay structure that causes cultures to go sideways, you know, and I won't get into a big discussion about that. But when you look at companies, people talk about what you need to set up as a culture. And the biggest mistake I think leaders can make is even doing nothing is doing something.
Right.
You know, you're sending a message, you're setting a culture, you're setting a tone by every decision you take or don't make. Right.
So each has a consequence.
You know, you can't avoid setting up a culture. You're doing it whether you plan it or not.
Yeah, it'll happen on its own. We kind of derailed you, Dan. I'm sorry. Were you? I'm sorry, Sheila. I just called you by the wrong name. I could get away with it on the radio if I didn't point it out, right? You were in the middle of a thought and we kind of took that off to a tangent. Do you remember where you were?
Well, actually, I just wanted to bridge on that and then acknowledge Matt had something because the leader is under a microscope. And how they behave, what they say, what they don't say, that sets the tone. It also builds the fact that most people are going to observe behaviors and draw conclusions if you don't give them the right conclusions to draw. So one of the things I respect so much about how Matt leads is his inclusivity.
Yes.
That is a key word in culture. And just a quick reference, before I joined Deanne's team, I was working at a nuclear power plant that was in crisis. The attitude and the spirit of it was it was almost like having warring factions. It took inclusivity to dramatically transform performance, bring them up to a high performing power plant, to actually bridge the management and non-management workforces. And it, what I mean by inclusivity, and then I'd love to hear Matt's piece on that, is when we've got people who are a little afraid of the anger of the workforce, typically managers will retreat and try to own decisions and then drive it. When we engaged the angriest, they became the leaders of change. It was profound. And a particular measure of performance was about how much work gets done that's been scheduled, especially in the nuclear power plant world. 43% of the work that was scheduled was getting done. By the time we finished this plan and execution of it with the right change management and the right inclusivity, it was 93%.
Wow.
And that's when you know you've touched culture.
Yes, 100%. Matt, you had something to chime in there with?
Well, I'm just fascinated to have the conversation around culture because in business, you don't with other business leaders, it's not talked about, I think, enough. You talk about sales, you talk about margins, you talk about your product development or the services that you're providing. And these are all things that you can look on paper and you can see measurable results, right? And the thing of it is, if you're growing your business 20-30%, how are you then looking at your culture and growing that 20-30%? And that's a hard question to really
it's
ask
a hard thing
and
to
address
measure.
And measure, right? Yeah. But it has to be done.
Yeah.
I think it has to be. It has to be done because at the end of the day, and I think I said this when we first talked, but I think it's worth repeating, is that it's people that are driving the businesses and making the decisions. Good, bad, or indifferent. And so the values and the behaviors and how they show up, how people are engaged from leadership to, you know, first employee that, comes in the door is really paramount. And it all sets the tone. And so this notion around inclusivity is really, really important from a culture standpoint. And I've kind of drilled down to it a lot more recently. And there's some really key factors around just, you know, having good inclusivity. And one is just providing a safe environment, that it's a safe place. People feel safe. And then that it's a welcomed environment. People feel welcomed as well. And they're treated with respect and equal for the most part with everyone, you know, involved. Mm-hmm. And then there's two other ones that I think are really, really, really important. One is for people to be heard. And this one's a tough one because, especially in larger organizations, how does everyone get heard? And it doesn't mean that we're going to do everything you say or the ideas that you have, but you were heard, you were valued, and then it was recognized, but this is the direction that we're going to go. And really from a team environment, that there's that understanding that everyone can have a voice. This is the decision that was made and why, right?
Right.
And I think if someone knows and feels they were heard, but a different decision was made, I think that's okay versus not being heard, feeling disrespected, feeling small, feeling that leadership or people don't care, that just puts someone in a position to be more disengaged in what they're doing. And then the last one is just to be recognized. I think fundamentally as humans, we want to be appreciated and feel appreciated and be recognized for what we're doing.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I think those are basic human needs. I think it might be a Tony Robbins thing or lots of people in the self-development world, but most of us want to feel contribution. You know, we want to feel contribution and we want to feel like we have a purpose. And if you feel recognized for that purpose, it's much more fulfilling. And then I think, Dan, you even touched on the idea of, you know, how you're showing up at work and like the work-life thing. So you're still the same person, right? So if you're coming to work and you're enjoying what you do and what you're doing aligns with your personal values, you're going to be a better person at home because you're happier, mm-hmm. and vice versa, mm-hmm. you know? So it all ties together.
Yes. And you know, Matt said this early on, and I think it's worth restating and maybe even talking about it a little bit. But when we interview folks to come to work or we're being interviewed to go work somewhere, it's so important that you're looking at it's matchmaking.
Yeah.
You know, I worked with a technical company and I was responsible for 12 career centers, 10,000 students getting placed every year. And every one of those human beings in those companies we worked with had a different DNA, right? And so I used to joke that I was vice president of eHarmony. And I think it's so important for individuals as much as companies to look at not just experience, which is what you see on a resume, and we spend so much time digging into that, but what can I give you and what can you bring here? Mm-hmm. You know, and really making sure that that's synergistic and that it's a multiplier effect, you mm-hmm. know, so that you've got a team that you think of it like a chain, right? Every link in that chain has a purpose. And if one of us broke, the whole chain breaks. And so it's really about looking at that whole system, making sure you've got all the gaps filled, that you have balance and inclusivity, that, you know, you're listening to different perspectives and you're bringing insights from other places. People enjoy that and thrive in that. And making sure that you're in a culture that fits who you are and how you show up is really, really critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think touching back on the idea of measuring that, I think one of the easy ways to measure it, and you ladies can agree or disagree or give some insight into that, but obviously turnover is part of it, and that's costly.
Yep.
So if you can bring that number down, then you must buy, you know, that's a measure of we must be doing something right. Right.
Well, there are some other, you know, I think oftentimes we think it's elusive, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to measure, but turnover is a huge one. And the unfortunate thing about turnover is it's rearview mirror stuff, right? You find mm-hmm. out you're really broken when you've got people exiting in mass bulk, right? You know, when we measure customer service, there's the net promoter score.
Right.
With employees, there's kind of that same concept. It's net promoter or engagement, right? Mm-hmm. And the other aspect is really what stories are you hearing on the street from your employees? When you ask someone, what is it like to work here? Or like Matt had the dinner the other night, why did you come here? When you see excitement and people telling stories about what brings them to life, you know your culture is a positive culture, right? When you see people with dead eyes and they're talking about all the things their friend's culture has and they don't have that, I mean, that too is a measurement, right? So mm-hmm. it's paying attention to what's going on in the street and the measuring engagement.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. As a leader, if you are the leader of a company, I mean, this is what you were hinting at, kind of. If you walk in the room, you're like, so guys, tell me a story. What do you think of me? You're not going to get some honest answers. So how does a leader have that ear to the ground? I mean, this is where they bring in outside consultation. I guess that's one way. But how can they consistently be in tune with that? If, you know, when you're standing in front of the CEO, I don't care who you are and how great your company is, there are certain ways that you are just going to present in front of your boss. And if you have a beef, you're probably not just going to come right out with it.
Yeah.
So how does a leader keep on top of that? Do you have some strategies?
Well, we've done a couple of things. I'm just talking with someone who has built a very successful business. And she said, I just brought in a director of ops that is phenomenal. I realize I'm not sure what work I have to do right now. And I said, what a wonderful time to reframe your leadership. You've built it. It's now a very successful operation. How about going back into the workforce and having small coffee clutch conversations with three or four people, because one-on-one can be intimidating. When you're talking with the boss, it's kind of like, are you scrutinizing me? Is this safe? But when you start bringing small groups and generate permission, that goes back to the safety frame of reference, but also the being heard that Matt has talked about. That is, how do we build the rapport that allows them to say, hey, do you know what I just said to the boss? And she or he said, oh, thanks for telling me. A lot of times I've noticed that leaders get concerned that if there's something that comes up, like a lot of complaints, then that's their job to fix it. But that's the other piece of the toolkit that's missing. So I wanted to make sure that we addressed, you know, we talked about how to hire and select, but then how are you making sure that the job description fits what you really want and it isn't just what you do? Then how do you help leaders have the conversations that respect and bring in the right quality of dialogue that also is about the accountability? Yes, it's about results, but it's also about how we're doing and how what's going well. And then the question a lot of times we don't say is to the person who is reporting to us, what do you think you could do about that? So it's building some of the simplistic techniques that engage people throughout. It isn't always the leader's job to do it. It's the leader's job to set the tone, to make it something others want to be involved in.
Right. I would second that. I think it's so critical to stay plugged in with employees. And, you know, oftentimes in any culture, in any company, that there's them and us, right? There's senior leaders and mid-managers. There's mid-managers and employees. There's this team and that team. And it's so easy to have adversarial, you know, I'm a victim of whatever that other is. And creating that space that says, how do we want to show up together? And what is the work? And what is your part in that? Is really critical, and keeping that dialogue open. And I like what Sheila said about making sure it's not personal where you're sitting down. You never want an employee to feel interrogated. Right. And you have to assume that a leader isn't going to get honest feedback just one-on-one, you know.
Right.
So I love the coffee chats. I'm working with an architectural company right now who just lost a principal, you know, that's worked there for 13 years. It's a third of their organization. And so, as you can imagine, their organization's in turmoil, and we're doing a lot of work to level set and bring in new people and build processes. But them sitting down and just saying, what's on your mind? What fears do you have? What questions can I answer? In nothing helps people talk like having food and coffee in front of them, right? So getting them to just let their guard down a little bit and communicate, oftentimes using surveys like engagement surveys, or not making it a huge event, just doing spot checks in small groups. There's lots of vehicles like that, but I think the two things that are critical is making sure it's two-way, that there's communication and ownership that goes with that, and that it's not just the leader's responsibility to dig information. And finally, I would say making sure that there's outcomes, that you people feel heard, they know what you are articulating that you're going to do with the information, and then go actually do it. Yeah. And then tell them you did it, because sometimes we forget to tell people that we did the work, and then you don't get credit for it.
Right. Yeah. That's a good one. So sometimes making those shifts, I mean, we touched on your six-year tour with the insurance company. And that, obviously that points to the fact that it takes a while. So as a leader, you get this feedback. Matt, probably you haven't had too many times where you've recognized like, oh my gosh, this is a serious issue, because you were successful in kind of building a good culture from the get-go. But in some of these larger companies, or maybe in some different industries, when they recognize that, oh gosh, this is not working, and maybe it's something that they create it that isn't working. So making that shift, if you've got long-term employees, if you've got people that this is how we've always done it, I was used to my job, or I just coasted along and I don't really feel like changing that. How do you really make those shifts? I mean, that's a tough challenge. Yes.
So there is a wonderful change management model. It's through an organization called PROSEI, PROSEI. And they use a simple model called ADKAR. And it is, do you have the awareness and the desire, which are fundamental? the awareness of the what and why of change, and then the desire to be a part of it. And most of the time around desire, I think a lot of we have communicated it in organizations as this is my perspective of desire, but not necessarily the frontline perspective of the desire. So we have to change what we're communicating to be able to match and align to the employee. And then you go to knowledge. Do they have the knowledge on how to be successful? And that knowledge then leads to ability. So when to me, the core has always been, I can help you set up, leader, how to set the awareness and the desire. Then I can do the tools of the knowledge and the ability. And then we have to build the processes. The R stands for reinforcement. Okay. We build the processes and tools, performance reviews and accountability, whatever conversations, whatever measures of success we're using. Those are the processes to make sure our systems are really aligned to what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah. So in that example that you gave, you know, 6 years later, what was the measure of, you know, now the change has happened?
Well, the first thing we should probably say is not every change takes 6 years.
Right. Yeah, no, we don't want to scare anyone. Yeah, so that's one example.
And you kind of alluded to this, but I think it's an important note. Size of company matters a lot. Industry matters a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked in everything from sports and entertainment. Sheila's been in power plants. You know, we've got cutting edge entrepreneurial sporting goods, you know, sporting clothing company. We've got auto spa, you know, companies. Every one of those has its own culture, mm-hmm. where they are today and where they want to be. And they also have kind of a skill DNA. Insurance is a very risk averse by design culture, right? And so, and you'd couple that with a 30-year environment. They had been around since 1929, you know, going through
this. Yeah, that's kind of an extreme example.
Yeah. So yeah. I just wanted to first say that, you know, it really does depend on industry and then the process and how you move through it. And frankly, how ready to go are the leaders? How strong a backbone do they have? How good a listeners are they? How willing are they to make tough calls when you need to make tough calls? You know, you go through this AGCAR process and there may be points along the way, and there usually are, where you realize this person might have got us where we are today, but they're not going to help us get to the future. Or, wow, we made a mistake. This person's not culturally fit. Or they make a decision that they don't fit the culture.
Yeah, they realize.
And really kind of owning that and taking honor in the process, that can speed or slow down a process as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, Matt, you do have some examples of maybe times where you've had to make those tough calls. Yes.
I can't remember if I shared this story the last time, but yeah, I mean, look, I'm not perfect and we're human beings, so we're definitely not perfect, but we've learned a lot through experience and through more clarity of understanding the culture that we want to have, that we can recognize when there isn't a culture fit. And we had that. We had, you know, probably 2010, 11, we really set out to embark on a new division for the company and really get into more traditional retail sales. And so we felt, you know, we needed to hire someone who had expertise in that area. And we did. And he was 20 plus years experience in the industry, had amazing relationships, contacts, things of that nature. And sure enough, was able to drive revenue very quickly in a, you know, in an 18 month time period. However, from a culture standpoint, it was painfully not a fit. Mm-hmm. And that was a big experience for us to see and really recognize and, you know, really what a poor culture fit looked like, and then how we dealt with it in an integral way. Mm-hmm. And then when we did, like, the company kind of really flipped in a positive way from then how sales and profitability went, decision making went, and then just the overall morale that people had around the business really improved.
That's so interesting.
It was really interesting to experience and see.
Yeah. See, that's a great example of the leader walking the talk.
Right.
Because the courage it takes, the person could deliver numbers, but when there's discord, and if employees don't see leaders having the courage to say this isn't the right fit, then they realize that it's more talk than it is walk.
Right.
So yeah. the courage is such a huge leadership
right.
attribute.
Well, and kudos to Matt for having that long vision, right? Because you could be looking at those numbers and, whoa, we're making tons of money right now. But you were seeing the writing on the wall that if your employees are starting to fall apart 10 years down the road, those numbers aren't going to matter much.
Yeah. And so first of all, I think Sportique's evolution has happened really because of teamwork, right? And so it was also a team effort to make that decision and recognize that as well. And yes, myself, my business partner, we also had to listen and hear and take heedance to what we were witnessing and make the decision. But it was really a team effort all around.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it is one of our key values. Like, we get it done with teamwork. There's no way we could grow 20%, 30% annually in where we want to go without teamwork. And I think it's just really important. I think that's an essential part, I think, in any business, but mm-hmm. to really have it be a focal point as a value, then what are the behaviors? What, when we're hiring, asking questions around what does a good teammate look like for you? And then how do you show up as a teammate as well? And really hearing people's stories and conversation around that helps clarify, is this a good fit, you know, right. for us or not?
Right. And I think that's where some of those tools like the predictive index can help, because in an interview, everybody's going to give that right answer. I mean, if you just ask me, how are you a team player? Of course, I'm going to give all the perfect answers. Mm-hmm. But if you have those tools where they, you know, kind of sneakily get the right answer, right?
Yeah, you get in there and get a truth. And, and
Matt, you want to hear their stories.
Yeah, Matt said it really well that, you know, the predictive index and some of these other tools, if you're asking the right questions and focusing more just on skills and experience, you're A, creating safety, because now you've opened up a dialogue with the person that is likely going to work with you, and you're having these transparent, wonderful conversations, and you're also learning about each other and making sure that that e-harmony is happening, you know, mm-hmm. for lack of a better term. And the opposite can happen. You know, I say this kind of flippantly, but it's reality. If you put the wrong person in an organization, what Matt described, I mean, it's organ rejection, right? You put
That's
a heart,
good analogy.
You put a something in a body, and either the body dies or the organ has to be taken out, right? And so if you, as a leader, are paying attention to that, and you're watching the blood flow, and you're watching the vitality and the stats on the body, you could make those decisions quickly and adjust.
Yeah.
Can I give a different analogy?
Yes.
Same but different.
Maybe more positive.
Yes. No. It's really along the same lines, but it's one that, when I heard it, it really helps me look at culture, and just, you see alignment, and it's just a good frame of reference. But if you have 10 people in a room and one person is sick with the flu, well, the 9 people can't make that one person get better, right? But that one person with the flu can get all other 9 sick.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good way to look at that.
Yeah, both of those. Really good visual. Yeah. Little radio high five over there. Those are really, like, when you put it in those terms, you know, I mean, we all kind of know the one bad apple thing, but like, that really is true. That, you know, you can't, I mean, I think there is some level of the 9 positive people might be able to shift that one sick person a little bit, but chances are they're going to infect the rest before that happens.
Well, and it goes back to the AGCAR model and the reinforcement, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of values do we have in place? Are we hiring to those? Are we recognizing and rewarding people according to those? And the other side, the icky part, is do we have consequences when you aren't living
right.
the culture and the values?
So, I mean, Sheila can probably attest to this, but the predictive index is the predictive index. It's not like you're going to change your predictive index. Like, you're not going to change your score. It might vary in slight degrees, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really change. So you are who you are. And so if you're not a good fit in that culture, in that environment, that's okay. There's
right.
going to be somewhere else where you're going to be an amazing fit, and you're going to be able to thrive in a better culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it behooves all parties to recognize fit, right? And that's why I want it to be a two-way street from the beginning, that this person is just as excited to come on board as we're excited to hire them,
mm-hmm.
right? So
it's funny. I had an HR operations director that I worked with, and she said it really well. When we had to let somebody go, she would say, "We're helping them be successful somewhere else."
Yeah.
And, you know, I had different visuals of that sometimes, like opening a chute and sending them out the door. But, right. You know, it really, at the end of the day, if they don't fit your culture, they might fit somewhere else. And absolutely. Everybody's going to be more productive and happy right. when that's the case.
To use your eHarmony analogy, there is somebody for everyone.
That's right.
There is a job for everyone. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's really good. I like that. And, you know, I mean, I've had that experience myself, actually, in that I have had a little awakening in that I'm not in the right job for me.
Yeah.
And I took it upon myself to make a big leap and like, I'm going to go do something different. But and it came actually from doing some of these assessments where I kind of recognized, oh, boy. I was doing good, but I'm like, I could do better if I was doing something else. So I think those are useful tools. I mean, we should start giving these to people as they graduate from school.
And Deb, part of what you're talking about is what happens when people exit. A lot of times it comes with you failed.
Right.
And that is never the truth in terms of what the person brought to it. They came doing the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Predictive Index says you can change your behaviors, but it's not sustainable.
Right. That's just it.
So how we treat people, even in that exit, is along the lines of what Deanne just said, is how do we say to people, I'm going to help you be successful somewhere else, or take this as a great lesson and then be better in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
It's only about, again, the respect. So I don't change my values when I'm ready to say you're out.
No.
I have to hold my values and the dignity of the individual so that they're making better choices. I see Matt just lit a fire under his seat on this one.
100%. You have to be the same on all fronts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And your team's watching.
Yes.
You know, your team is watching. I think so often we think we can make decisions and, you know, if they're not aligned, if they're not intentional, if we don't play them, maybe we have a great decision, but how we play it out is horrible. You're sending just shockwaves through the company because as a leader and running an organization, you're saying, you said you believe in this and that we'll treat people this way. And I just saw what you did over here and how that person left here. And that creates a whole story and a culture.
Absolutely.
I'll give you a different take on it and a story that happened this past year with Sportique. We had a really good employee leave after four or five years, but it was time. They knew it was time and it was the right move for them. As hard as it was for that person to leave, because really was attached to the culture and attached to the people. And so was I in terms of her and her role. And so on her departure, though, we had everyone in the conference room and everyone went around and said one thing that they appreciated from her about her. And it was a powerful.
Did she cry? I would cry.
Yeah. It was a powerful experience, not only for her, but I think for everyone in the room.
Yeah. So that I like that.
I mentioned this firm that I'm working with, but they just had a partner leave after 12 years. And the CEO got notice of that Wednesday last week and, you know, went through that grief cycle, right? Anger, denial, just feeling wounded and hurt and lied to and scared. And we had to work. I was on the phone a lot this weekend trying to help him mentally get to the place where he could show up with the team on Tuesday to make the announcement in a way that reflected his heart and his relationship with this guy and the caring, all because how you do that, you know, sends a tone to the organization and to that individual of, I've got a heart, I care, I want what's best for you. And the whole team can see that and they go, wow, this is a guy I want to work with. Mm-hmm. What class, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that you don't feel those things. I guess that's the other side of it. A lot of the work of being a CEO is hard, lonely work. You know, there's a lot of self-doubt. There's a lot of feeling alone or blinded or whatever. And especially on the culture front, you know, there's a lot in there that feels really personal. This is their house, basically.
Family.
Yeah, it's my family, my house. Mm-hmm. I'm doing everything I can to create security and life for you. Mm-hmm. And how do you kind of work through those processes and help people feel good about being there and do some of that in private, but make sure you've got the support system to help you show up in the way that reflects your culture.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that because it really does play into, you know, the ongoing culture is how you handle any of those situations. Same if an employee is sick and needs to be out for like long-term disability or something like that, how you handle those sorts of things and goes back to that idea of keeping people with that safe feeling, you know, safe to know that you're going to take care of them. They're still going to have a job, all of those things. It really plays into it. So I want to kind of touch on if people are interested in the services that you ladies offer, how do they find you? What else do you, I mean, we've touched a lot on these specific things. Are there other elements of what you do that you want to speak to?
I actually wanted to touch just on one question because I don't think we answered it as directly.
Sure.
And that is, how do you measure?
Yes.
And one of the measures that became a very significant contributor to a learning culture for a large nonprofit in the Valley, and it was when the leadership decided, and it was a big debate on how they were going to measure engagement as one of the four pillars of success for the business. So measuring engagement actually came down to about, I think it was five questions, and how the organization responded to it in mass. And we had a high level of response to these questions, but it was in the mix of several questions, but there were five that were considered the anchors of engagement. And that was a condition of the measure of success for the business's performance, as well as revenue and so on. So I go back to what Matt had to say, and that is how important it is that we measure more than just the dollars, the numbers, performance, so to speak.
Can you give a couple examples of what those questions were? Do you remember? I mean, were they specific to that company?
Actually, to the point we started with is it has to do with how I evaluate being valued. Mm-hmm. Being heard. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that I ask in a provocative way, and then we turn it into a measure, is what earns you the right to be a leader?
Ooh.
Because when you ask that, it's about what value system or what standard we hold. And do we hold that throughout the business that then we can say, this is what we want to measure against? And which is what we did in the insurance organization, is that we used a set of measures that was going to be a critical part of whether or not you were successful as a manager. We did before, during, and after measures, and across the time zone, the 5 years mm-hmm. That we were measuring, there was an improvement overall on average of 5% in how the organization experienced leadership. That was a big impact. So I wanted to make sure that we spoke to, there are ways to be able to track on the right track.
Yeah, that's good.
And the only thing I would add before we give the ways to reach us is putting teeth in that. You know, you measure engagement, you measure revenue, you measure profitability or expense management, reward that way too. Mm-hmm. So the lack of it causes your bonus to be less. The awesomeness of it causes your bonus to be more, and because that directly impacts revenue. So why wouldn't a leader want to reward the leaders that are doing well with it?
Yeah.
So in terms of working with us, I'll go back to where we are and what we do. We help businesses grow, turn around, transform, oftentimes with culture, and always culture is an important measure and implicator of businesses being able to grow and transform. We've got a website. It's onpointbiz, onptbiz. You can find us there. Our phone numbers are there. And we'd love to hear from companies that would like a great partner.
You're any industry? Are there specific sizes you like to work with? Local, national? Where are your client base?
We are industry agnostic. And we have to laugh about that. You look at our website, it's everything from retail to power plants to nonprofits to car washes, academia, hospital administration. So we are very industry agnostic. We've learned that every one of them has people and process and revenue and challenges. So that's not important at all. The businesses we find where we can add the hugest value are sort of that mid-size mm-hmm. company, small to mid-size, where they're blowing and going or need to blow and go.
Yeah.
Right? So
fantastic. Okay. And then Sportique, Matt. I know you're, we have to tell people to spell it properly. Sportique.
Mm-hmm.
NoE.com.
No U.
I said E and then I said no E. No U. There is no U in Sportique.
Yeah. I just want to echo something what Deanne just said around rewards.
Yes.
Right. And to me, it's really a standard that we have. And I think this really goes to, you know, human to human relations, is really creating win-win scenarios. Win-win scenarios with employees, with supply chain, with customers, with investors, owners, any of them, win-win. And so if the company's winning, then sure, the employees should win. Sure, owners and investors should win, right? And I think that's part of the culture too, is if people are engaged and they see that if they put forth effort and the company did well, then they're going to do well too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, I think historically what people have seen in other areas is they work really hard, the company does really well, and someone else rewarded, not them. And so really creating win-win, I think, is really important.
Yeah, that is a big one. You kind of just spoke to the whole idea of conscious capitalism, which is one of our studio sponsors. I know you're a member as well. You ladies are also members. Yeah. Yeah, so we all are kind of on that same page. So it is for the good of everybody, really. That's what it comes down to. So, all right. Anything else that any of you want to add? Believe it or not, we have been talking for a whole hour.
It goes by
so fast. Yeah. Do we have any last tidbits? And we left everybody with where to find you guys. We are good. All right. So
it's been wonderful being here.
Yeah,
thank you
all for joining me and great conversation. Great conversation again, Matt.
Yeah. Thanks, Deb, for being a champion and around culture and really wanting to carry on conversation and really help.
Yeah.
Not only, you know, the community, but others that can hear and pick up any nuggets and takeaways that could help them as a leader or them as an employee in their business, which quite frankly, I think we're all leaders in some shape or form. We are.
Absolutely.
So.
And the only thing I would say is it's not rocket science at the end of the day. It's really about being intentional and wanting to create space and being willing to step into it.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, there's so much of it that, and I, granted, I have these conversations all the time, so it's who I speak to. So I see it. I don't know if this is reality, but I feel like we're just bringing that human side back. You know, we're all human beings. So it's just acknowledging that. So no matter the size of your company, all of these people that are helping you be successful are people.
And it's not in place of revenue generation. No. It's for the end to get to revenue generation and everybody feeling good. They're not mutually exclusive.
Exactly.
One more acknowledgement is it also takes the courage of someone, and I'll give Matt this gift as well, and that is the willingness to look at ourselves and ask the tough questions. What do I need to learn, see, and overcome so that I'm a better person? Because as a leader, that's what sets the tone for everybody else.
It's absolutely
so powerful.
Absolutely.
So being able to look and tell the truth to ourselves so we can grow
and
outgrow.
Yes. In work, in life, in all of it. So that is a beautiful end note. Thank you, Sheila. Right. Thank you all for joining us for Culture Crush RX. I'm your host, Deb Karen with Anahata Marketing. We are very proud to be part of the Phoenix Business Radio X community, hitting your airwaves in partnership with Mac 6 and Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. And as always, I hope that you've enjoyed the conversation and you've learned something that you can take away to make your business a little bit better. Thank you.